Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.
Hello, good evening and welcome to the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and myself, Ben Emmett. As ever, our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie and the text and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. Standard text rate supply, that's 087-179-1032. And of course, we're available as a podcast and live on the World Wide Web at dublincityfm.ie. And we're going to get straight into it, John, with what to see in the night sky. Oh, of course, there is a comet on the way, which we have forewarned people about over the past couple of weeks and months. And we're still not sure whether it's going to reach naked eye visibility. But maybe you have some more information on that for us?
Yeah, we'll talk about that in just a moment. Now, officially, the International Space Station is due in our evening skies, but we don't know the exact time on this because it only gives tomorrow evening's time. It's just after 7 p.m, so we'll go by that. And it's only a small pass as well, just 1 minute.
It's quite low down and not the brightest. I think it's about magnitude minus 1.6, which isn't bad, but
no,
it's not too bad. Fairly short one and be difficult enough to catch.
A better one on Thursday at 6:20 p.m. for 3 minutes, again, then slipping back into 1 minute on the 19th, about 90 minutes later after that. So, yep, not too much to see there. You will get to see it. In fact, just leaving the house this evening, Ben, very good clear skies tonight.
Oh, yes.
Very, very good clear skies out where we are. And the first thing I saw was a big satellite flaking through the sky. So, and all the Marses and the Jupiters and everything are all up there. So we'll start with Mercury. It's merging into our dawn late this week, so if you want to have a crack at seeing the planet Mercury, it's going to climb and brighten every day, and by tomorrow it should be fairly easy to view. Low in the southeast, of course, at a magnitude of plus 0.5, and as usual, binoculars always help. So on the morning of the 19th, which is Thursday, Mercury 13 degrees left of a waning crescent moon. So that's a good pointer for you if you want to see that. Venus, on the other hand, is very bright at a magnitude minus 3.9. It's shining low in the west-southeast in twilight, and it sets around twilight sense. So it's gone out of our morning skies and it's coming back into our evening skies, which is really good. So look for the dimmer Saturn to Venus's upper left, closer to it day by day. So you've got three of them together. They're only about 10 degrees apart, so they're quite close. Mars, it's remarkable to see. It's still very high at the moment in the sky, and it's around 8 to 9 p.m. It's nearly at its zenith, which is the highest point it's going to be. And it is a minus 0.6, actually, so it's not that bright, but it is definitely orangey and well worth a look. Over, way over to the right, Jupiter, on the other hand, its magnitude minus 2.3, so not quite as bright as Venus. It's in Pisces at the moment. It shines high in the south-southwest in twilight, rises very quickly, but it's over to set at about 10 to 11 p.m. there or thereabouts, depending where you are in the country. And telescopically speaking, Jupiter has shrunk to 37 arc seconds wide. Saturn, its magnitude plus 0.8, so quite dim, and it's to the upper left of Venus. So if you do get Venus, and you will not miss Venus because it's good and bright, so you'll get a chance to see that as well. Uranus and Neptune, unfortunately, these are the ones that you need a good pair of binoculars or a good telescope to see. Their magnitudes are 5.7 and 7.9, respectively. And, you know, unless you're a really good planet watcher, there's not much to see in those. That's the only thing. Just in Uranus's case, just a blue, sort of a hazy type of a picture.
But if you see it through a telescope, you will know it's a planet because you'll be able to make out that it is a disc, whereas all stars will just appear as points of light, assuming you're focused in on it.
Mm-hmm. But it's worth watching, and just to save the probably one of the many percent on the planet have seen. Mercury is about 1%.
1% is estimated, yes.
Yeah, and much the same way we'd imagine for Uranus and Neptune, although you might see it, the vicinity that's in, you won't actually get to see it with the naked eye, really.
I don't think you've seen Neptune with the naked eye. I've seen Uranus with the naked eye. Because I had to have a little star map from a magazine to find it. You wouldn't know just looking up at the sky, whereas, say, when you look up and see Venus at its brightest, there's no question, really, is it, that's a star. And I have seen Pluto as well, which is at solar conjunction on Wednesday, but tomorrow, again, it was somebody at some Sky Watch a couple of years ago, and he said, do you want to have a look at Pluto? And he had a go-to, and there it was. It was, I had to take his word for it, because it was so far away and so dim, that did appear as a point of light, even in a decent telescope. I think it was a 12-inch, I'm not sure. But so I can say I've seen Jupiter, obviously. Pluto.
Yeah.
That's the only one I haven't seen now is Neptune.
There you go. I think we'll have a mission.
On this year's list.
Yep. Yeah. Or I won't say the bucket list. It's a watching list. There we go. Just to also let you know, Pluto is just one of the millions of objects in the Kuiper Belt. And when we were all young children in school, you remember all those days years ago? Many of us learned about the planets, the sun, maybe about the asteroid belt. But there's a thing out there called the Kuiper Belt, and sitting beyond the orbit of Neptune. And it's pronounced Kuiper, although spelled K-U-I-P-E-R. And it's home to millions or even billions of icy objects that orbit the sun just like the planets. So Pluto is out there. It's quite cold.
Sometimes called the Edgewood Kuiper Belt, because it was co-discovered by Edgewood. I think this is Irish, if I'm not mistaken. That's why I always call it the Edgewood Kuiper Belt. And then, of course, beyond that, we have the Oort cloud, which goes out maybe one light year or so. And that's not just all, whereas the Kuiper Belt, as far as I'm aware, and the planets are all in more or less the same plane orbiting the sun. The Oort cloud is a, from what I can gather, is a halo around the whole solar system and contains possibly trillions and trillions of objects and mostly comets. And who knows, maybe that's where, and some people think that's where there might be a very big, dim planet.
Yeah.
Planet X, or Planet M, whatever you want to call it. Because there's some people think there's something big out there that seems to be perturbing bits of rocks and comets that sends them into the inner solar system on various occasions.
Yeah.
Well, something has to disturb them to knock them out of the orbits they've been in for billions of years.
Yeah, and just stepping out past Uranus and Neptune, which is the outermost planet, you go to Pluto, which is right bang in the middle of the Kuiper Belt. So that's where that is. And NASA estimates that there are 1 trillion comets in the Kuiper Belt, as well as hundreds of thousands of objects with diameters of 62 miles or wider. And you're quite right, Ben, the Kuiper Belt was named for the astronomer Gerard Kuiper, who actually published the scientific paper in 1951. So that's where that came from. Is spot on.
Thank you, John. And we have a text in. I think it's from Alan. Mm-hmm. He says that Voyager 1 is now heading through the Kuiper Belt. I know it's beyond the heliosphere. I hadn't heard it was, or not the Kuiper Belt. He says the Oort cloud.
It's very possible, because it's running at about 40,000 miles per hour, and it's way out beyond our solar system, as we would call it now. But it's been out there for a number of years, so it's quite possible that it could be out near that at this particular stage. So just a reminder again that the International Space Station is still, it will be in our evening skies from officially this evening until February the 3rd in our evening skies.
Thank you, John. Much nearer to home, of course, we have the moon, and from our vantage point here in Dublin, it has not yet risen, but it will rise tomorrow morning at 5:20 a.m., and it will be due south of us at just after 9 a.m. tomorrow morning. At that stage, it will be you'll only be able to see 17% of it, the left or western edge of it. As it heads toward, it's a waning crescent as we head towards the new moon next Saturday. But it'll be due south just after 9 a.m. and it will set then at 12:37 p.m. just before, or yeah. For some people it's lunchtime, but at that stage it'll just have shrunk another 1% or so. And I mentioned the new moon, that will be on Saturday the 21st at just 11 p.m. in the evening, and that's also the nearest new moon of 2023, when it'll be a mere 356,570 kilometres away from Earth. Compare that now with Jupiter, which on Thursday is at perihelion.
Mm-hmm.
It's the nearest point in its orbit to the Sun, when it will be at 4.95 AUs, or astronomical units, mm-hmm. which is the mean distance between, 1 AU is the mean distance between the Earth and the Sun. So a quick calculation tells me that's around about 750 million kilometers from the Sun. So, and from that point of view, the Moon is just next door, an inch away.
Well, that's true. It was a magnificent sight this morning, just coming up, just as it was getting bright, and yesterday morning the same. Just in that bluey, not the black light that you get during the night, but the blue morning light. And it was just less than half, is that about right? About 25% or thereabouts. It's a wonderful sight to see.
It sure is. Which brings us to the Sun. Sunrise tomorrow in Dublin is at 8:29 a.m., which is 6 minutes earlier than a week ago, and local noon is at 12:35 p.m., which is 2 minutes later than a week ago, and the sun sets at 4:41 p.m. tomorrow, which is 11 minutes later than a week ago. And 10 minutes later than a week ago, we'll have civil twilight. Tomorrow will be ending at 20 past 5, and then nautical twilight from then until 5 past 6, and then from then until 6:45 tomorrow evening, we'll have astronomical twilight. And then at that time, nighttime will officially begin. So all that means then is tomorrow we'll have 2 minutes and 47 seconds more daylight than today, when we will have 8 hours and 12 minutes of daylight, and that's 17 whole minutes more than a week ago. So, yeah. Oh, also, and coming up on Sunday too is just for your information, the Chinese New Year, the Year of the
That's
Rabbit,
right. Yeah.
On Sunday. And on the evening on Sunday, I think you mentioned, John, Venus and Saturn are very close, a half a degree apart. And the next day, they'll be less than a day or 1 degree apart and 5 degrees to the upper right of the moon. So that's a nice little conjunction.
Yeah, and just after the, remember the jumbo jet that took off with the rocket to go into space with Virgin that failed, the UK space chiefs have vowed to try again after the failed rocket launch. They're still not sure exactly why this happened. They call it an anomaly. So in other words, there was a problem somewhere along. So it's left the aircraft at 35,000 feet, just over the Atlantic Ocean, just off Cork. And it was due to enter orbit and discharge 9 satellites, but unfortunately it didn't. I still don't know where it is at the moment. It's really strange. I don't know, they're not telling us or something like that, but it hasn't come back down yet anyway. It is in some sort of an orbit. It will, the orbiter will decay and it will come back down. So we'll try and keep you informed of that, just to keep the head down.
Speaking of spaceports, I know they weren't successful from launch. Well, of course, the jumbo jet, especially modified jumbo jet, took off from Newquay in the southwest of England, there in England, Devon and Cornwall way. But I see Sweden, they have opened the first of Europe's mainland space ports. It's way up there in the north of Sweden.
It's only, did you see the photograph on the internet?
I have.
And it had the Aurora Borealis in behind it. It was absolutely fantastic.
No, I didn't see that. And they plan to do a lot of satellite launches from there, and it was opened just the other day there by the Prime Minister, Ulf Kristersson, and Sweden's King Carl Gustaf XVI. Also there to see it was the President of the EU Commission, Ursula von der Leyen.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes them approximately around, there's only about 10 countries or so who have the ability to do this. Now, Swedish Space Corporation, they expect around 10,000 new satellites to be launched globally over the next few years. So it's there's a lot of monetary reasons why a lot of people want to build spaceports nowadays. And that's, 10,000 over the next few years. And I reckon maybe up to 100,000 satellites by the year 2040. Compared to where we are at the moment, where there's about 5,000 operational satellites in orbit at the moment. And they reckon their first satellite launch is expected later this year, and it's 200 kilometres or 124 miles above the Arctic Circle in a very desolate area. They've something like 200 square miles where there's nobody, so that if there's a bit of a failure, at least there's practically zero chance of it hitting somebody, falling on somebody's house. And the rockets that are going to launch from there, to say they are capable of reaching space at altitudes of 260 kilometres, they won't be able to orbit Earth. So I don't quite understand that. But that's well done to Sweden on being the country with the
photograph
mainland
as well,
Sweden or mainland Europe to be the first to have a spaceport.
Yep. Now, I've had a number of emails and texts and phone calls about what telescopes to buy and whether I should go for binoculars or telescope and what books we should buy. So two in particular, one Gordon in Scotland, good evening Gordon, and Richard in Birmingham. And Richard he's been on wondering if he should go for a pair of binoculars first or a telescope. So he's found himself a nice little telescope which we're just working on at the moment, which has a go-to function on it. It's one of the Dobson, the big long Dobsonian ones.
A Dobsonian and a go-to?
Yeah, with the go-to on it now, the technology has come way, way up in this. He was looking at remember the ones that stand on the floor? And you have to keep following, but these ones have a go-to, and they operate through your phone with the app. All sorts of things, you can point in all different directions and just tell it where to go, and it goes. And in fact, I was talking to Stephen in K-Tech Telescopes earlier on, and he was just throwing us in the right direction. And we're going to try and get him back in the next number of weeks, I suppose, to probably discuss a little bit more in detail as to which telescope is best or which binoculars are best and what book. And one of the books that came up in conversation was Exploring the Night Sky with Binoculars by Sir Patrick Moore. Now, my version is just Patrick Moore, but the newer versions are Sir Patrick Moore. It's the same book, essentially. Mine is number 4 in the publications. Yep, the 4th edition, and it's a very, very good help around the skies. And I was lucky enough to get a book from Stephen when he came in the last time to give me Turn Left at Orion. It is another extremely good book, and it's well put together. It's got a big spiral thing, so you can't bend the pages too far, and they fall into a nice flow. So there's two books for you now as well. So now, I don't know whether you heard about this one, Ben, defunct or a NASA satellite that was taken out of commission from the 1980s. It was only due to last for about 2 years, but it's been floating around the orbit, around above our heads since the 80s. And it fell to Earth last Sunday, just only a couple of days ago, to meet its fiery demise. And it's a 38-year-old Earth radiation budget satellite weighing 5,400 pounds, which is about 2,100 kilos thereabouts. And it fell over the Bering Sea, which is way up north. So there's not too much, as you say. There's Siberia to the left, Alaska to the right. So there's not too much happening to there. So it fell at 0304 GMT on Monday morning, which was yesterday morning. So and a lot of it burnt up. So whether any of it got down to the surface of Earth, we're not sure. But I don't think at this stage we'll find anything belonging to it. So if it did fall in the sea, it's going to sink a little bit. Mm. In fact, it's going to sink quite a lot because it's quite deep up there.
Thank you, John. You're listening to The Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and myself, Ben Emmett. Our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm, and our text and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. Standard text rates apply. That's 087-179-1032. Speaking of text and WhatsApp, Alan has been back on reminding me of actually something I did read today or yesterday about two massive sunspots. Mm. At present, and making their way across the sun, and of course, if and when they do explode, if they're pointing in the direction of Earth, they'll spew billions of tons of electrically charged material, which will hit the atmosphere, and then after a day or two, and then we'll have these massive aurora. Mm-hmm. We can only hope. And he's actually also reminded me too something I did read earlier in the week about the leaky Soyuz craft that's attached to the International Space Station. They reckon there is a little puncture in it, and it's leaking air very, very slowly, and that the hole is about 1 millimeter in diameter, so it's really tiny. But they are considering what to do, and there is a possibility that they will send up an empty Soyuz craft to replace it, basically to bring the crew safely. It's a safety issue. I don't know how much of a risk it is going back in a craft that has a hole in it of a mere 1 millimeter diameter. Yeah, so but when you're coming through back through the atmosphere, it might. Yeah.
The ballpoint on a pen. That's yeah. about it. So just a quick word now, I think, about the comet C2022E3ZTF, to give its correct name. I'm looking at a photograph of it here, but this particular photograph was taken over a number of hours and a number of nights to give us the mean shape of the comet itself. So, as we know, comets are notoriously fickle things, and some are given high expectations, and we always would like to see a good show, and sometimes some of them fail to deliver. This one is a little bit odd as well, because we just don't know whether it's going to appear to the unaided or naked eye. And the best time to see that is from now, really, in the, where did I say, the north. It's very low in the sky. It's probably about 3 o'clock in the morning for us here in Ireland, 10 p.m. to 12 p.m. over in the U.S. on the coast that's closest to us. And it's there's a good chance of seeing it. So if you have a camera or something like that, you want to take a photograph, there is a big spray. It's a big curly spray. But whether we can see it with the naked eye, we are just not sure at the moment. So the best time, they say, is February the 1st and February the 2nd to get a really good, because it's climbing higher in the sky as the month goes on. But it is there just at the moment. And as it approaches the sun at its closest, February 1, February 2, that's the best time to see it. So we're going to keep an eye on that over the next coming weeks to see what evolves from that particular one.
And we'll keep you updated. Thank you for that, John. Very briefly, I just want to mention Webb. We haven't mentioned the James Webb Space Telescope in a while. And apparently it has confirmed its first discovery of an exoplanet. And this exoplanet is it's almost exactly the same size as Earth. They reckon it's 99% of the Earth's diameter. That's an amazing accuracy to claim for something that's so far away. It's actually 41. It's relatively close. And when I say relatively close, it's 41 light years away. It's in the constellation of Octans. And this planet now is formally being given the name LHS-475b. I don't know. Not a very exciting name, or not one that you would remember, or be inclined to remember a number like that. But they're saying that it's an Earth-sized, it's a rocky planet, and that among all operating telescopes, only the Webb Space Telescope is capable of characterizing the atmosphere of Earth-sized planets. And that's what they're trying to do at the moment, is to determine what, if any, it has an if it has an atmosphere at all, and if it has what the atmosphere is consisting of. Apparently, it's very hard to tell between a planet that has something like 100% carbon dioxide as an atmosphere and one that doesn't have one at all. But they say they know what type it doesn't have. It doesn't have a thick atmosphere like Titan, for example, methane. They'd be able to tell that. But there's a lot more studies and work to be done on it, of course. And they're saying that the planet is a few hundred degrees warmer than Earth. So, no little green men, unless they're very tough little green men walking around it, and probably could probably be more like Venus. It is very close to its parent star because it orbits in just 2 days, 2 Earth days. But the planet, it's a very small, very dull home star, and so although it's very close, it's only a few hundred degrees warmer than Earth. I think it's not quite a brown dwarf, but something of. It's very dull, very dull star anyway.
Yeah.
And because it is very close, closer than even Mercury is, much, much closer than Mercury is to the sun. Well, it goes around in 2 days.
It's really tough
days
to live there. Now, just before we go, I did want to get into where Starman is. That's the Tesla car that was sent up around Mars, but I will do that next week instead. But just before we go, I'm not sure if you've been watching TV recently about all the UFO reportings in the US. Now, Roswell was the first one, really, but the US government now is examining over 500 UFO reports at the moment. And seemingly everybody's out to see if they can see a UFO of some sort. And but they're looking into them all now, seemingly. So I take it with a pinch of salt, because they're really talking to them as drones or balloons, and a lot of them, of course, remain unexplained. So we'll just keep an eye on that particular subject over the coming weeks as well, because with over 500, which is twice the amount that were reported last year in 2022. So
okay. Thank you for that, Jan. Sorry, Alan also reports that about the sensitivity of the James Webb telescope, that it's able to detect the heat signature of a bumblebee on the moon.
Wow.
As far, if there was a bumblebee on the moon. But that's another story. Thank you for that, and thank you for our texters, and thank you, John, for your news item. But that's all the time we have this evening. Don't forget our email address is astronomy@dublincityofm.ie, and thanks, of course, is due to the people who put this program up as a podcast, and to James Sweeney. He makes it available as a podcast also, and Conor Lennon puts it up on astronomy.ie. But that's all from me, Ben Emmett, from this edition of The Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Up next, it's Hello China. 9 o'clock, it's Bren Linet with Threads. 11 p.m, Nigel Wood with Ear to the Globe and his World Music Mix. And then from midnight to 2 a.m, it's After Hours with Dave Barry's mix of jazz, blues and soul. But please join myself and John at the same time next week. We'll be back with all the latest news from around the universe. Until then, take care, reach for the thank you for listening, and say goodnight, John.
Goodnight, John.
Goodnight, John.
Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.